Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. I'm here with my co-host, Burl Love. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Sherry. How are you?
I'm good. And I'm also our special guest today. I'm very excited to have him for many, many reasons. It is Nolia, chef and restaurant owner, founder, Jeffrey Harris. And our timing is impeccable, even though we planned this out a little bit. As we sit here, we are waiting to hear who has been nominated for the James Beard Awards. It's nomination day. This is the Oscars, remember, of...
The Oscars of the food world.
The Oscars of the food world.
Of the chef world, yes.
And we have every reason to believe that Chef Harris is going to be nominated because he was last year.
Right. And he is kind of riding a wave of national attention right now, which we'll get into with him. Yeah, I can't wait to talk to him. I met him when we ate at Nolia's a few weeks ago around my birthday. Had a great experience. Now, full disclosure, I'm a sucker for New Orleans-style food. Like, that's my jam. I've gone to New Orleans, you know, just to go there to eat, like a vacation built around eating. So I was really excited to go there. He did not disappoint. And it's not the cheesy kind of like po' boys, gumbo kind of thing.
No.
This is very much a chef-driven, unique food experience.
And that is exactly what he's trying to do. He is very interested in having people look at Cincinnati, want to come to Cincinnati just for our food scene. So we'll get into that with
him. We'll get into all of that. But before, you know, we'd like to touch on some headlines. And we had a little bit of a headline that involved us this week. I'm sure it wasn't on, you know, everybody's radar, but it was a big story for us. And that was the Supreme Court made a decision in a lawsuit we filed after unsuccessfully trying to get records from the governor's office going way back 2 years now to when the Bengals were in the Super Bowl and Mike DeWine and his family entourage of 19 people went to the Super Bowl. And so we requested, like we did with the city of Cincinnati, because Mayor Aftab Perval also went, what was the cost to taxpayers in terms of sending the governor and the entourage to the Super Bowl? The city of Cincinnati gave that information to us the day we asked for it. Basically, the security detail for the mayor was one police officer, and with travel, dining, lodging, and all of that stuff, it cost the city of Cincinnati $6,000 to send the mayor, you know? You can think that's a lot. You can think that's a bargain. That's not really the point. The point is that's just something in terms of transparent government that's good to know, you know, in case people want to question whether that was good use of his time. I personally think it was great use of his time. I mean, you're the mayor of Cincinnati. The Bengals are in the Super Bowl. You should be there, right? Same with the governor. Have no issue with Governor DeWine going, but just like we did with the mayor of Cincinnati, we requested at first the expenses related to what it takes to provide security for the mayor and the number of people that went along with him. We were denied that information. The governor's administration and also it's the State Highway Patrol that provides that security denied it, saying that it fell under security, an exemption for security.
And their argument was that it would put the governor in danger to release, you know, these very secret security plans and that it would ruin things going forward and then people would know and he could be harmed. That was kind of their
argument.
Right.
And in the back and forth, we sort of, you know, we understood that position. Like, we don't want this story to assist any bad actor in planning a hit on, you know, the governors. So that's not what this story was about. So we said, look, we don't need an itemized list. We don't need to know where you rented the cars from. We don't need to know where people stayed. We don't even need to know, like, how many times you guys got Chick-fil-A. We just want, you know, at the end of the day, how much did it cost, period. And that was our argument, because once this was denied and we appealed, this ends up in the Supreme Court. And so 2 years later, we finally get a ruling from the Supreme Court, you know, agreeing with the governor's office And so we don't know how much money was spent to provide security and everything else involved with getting the governor and his entourage. Did I say it was 19 people?
I think it's 17. Was it 17?
Something like that, yeah.
But with them, it was 19. You know what I will
anyway,
say?
So we obviously are like, well, that's unfortunate. We've already written an editorial pointing out that, you know, this was clearly not a decision made in the best interest of keeping government transparent. What it was, because if you look at how the Supreme Court in Ohio is lined up, this was a vote along party lines. If you were Republican, you voted in favor of the governor's administration. If you were, you know, Democrat on the court, you know, the decision was 5-4. Pat DeWine, the son of the governor, recused himself.
As he also was on the trip.
since he was on the trip. So really, you know, I'm not trying to sound all sour grapes here, but objectively, you can see that, okay, this was about protecting their own. You know, like, we don't want the governor's office to be embarrassed. We have this little loophole we can use to not provide this information, and we're going to use that. And the Supreme Court, you know, did not rule in our favor. So, that's what we're talking about here in our newsroom.
So I do want to, I'm going to say two things. So I was there at the Super Bowl, and I did see the governor and our Ohio's First Lady, Fran. Nothing seemed out of line to me. I mean, if they had some sort of huge security detail, you couldn't tell. It seemed like, thinking back, this was a while ago, obviously, it didn't seem any different than the mayor's. Maybe it was like one person. I didn't feel like something was so crazy that, like, what are we hiding? But I don't know. And so that, and then he did have a funny aside that I actually never will. We did ask right off. He said he was with all of his family and everything. And of course, one of the reporters, there's national reporters in some of these press conferences. And I forget who asked this question. I think it was honestly a New York Times reporter asked, like, well, who paid? I would have asked anyway, but who paid, you know, for your family? And he's like, that was a very large and difficult check to write from my personal account. So we do know that he did, his family
right,
did
and he
go.
Said that. Like,
yeah, he did.
Like, he paid, you know, the expense. I'm sure he paid the expense of getting the tickets and everything like that. But he's also the governor and so of Ohio. And this was a big moment for Ohio. Again, this was not a story about, you know, the governor, you know, doing some extravagant junket at the expense of the taxpayers. This is really just about, you know, these are expenses. I think it's more than just a curious question about how much does it cost to send the governor and an entourage to the Super Bowl to the taxpayers. Because, and this is the question that remains unanswered. Undoubtedly, there are going to be people who are going to be trying to get in on that action. Oh, I want to go to the Super Bowl. I want, you know, everybody's excited and all of that stuff. So I think it's a legitimate question. It's like, did we, you know, how much money was spent to do that? And people should be able to discuss whether that is a legitimate expense, whether it was a little extravagant. That's not for us to decide. But now we just don't know. You know, we can't even have the discussion. And I challenge anyone who is, you know, who knows more about security than I do, to tell me how anyone could use a number. Like, let's say it cost, you know, if Aftab Perval going by himself, that cost the city of Cincinnati $6,000. Let's just say, you know, it cost, I'll throw a number out, $50,000, right, to Ohio taxpayers. Who would be able to take that number and then use it to devise a plot, right? It just doesn't. The argument was just so weak, it's almost laughable. But, you know, we're going to continue pushing on issues of access, government transparency, open records. I mean, that's one of the things we do as local journalists.
I mean, if you've come across my reporting, as many of you have, thank you for reading. What do I always say on top of the fact that, okay, that they did get this ruling in their favor? Just because you can keep something a secret doesn't mean you should. Every decision that our government officials make should be in the interest of transparency and the idea that we want to tell people the most information, just so they can know and feel comfortable with everything that's happening in their government.
I agree. So that's the fight we do. We continue fighting for you, the citizens.
I know. We'll give a shout out to Jack Reiner, who, while we may not have won this one, we have, you know,
you win some, you lose some.
His work,
but you gotta try,
is so important to what we do. And you guys, Burl never says no to me. Like, if I need a document, I just came back from Railroad Board where they're like, maybe we'll give you a document. And I asked the question of my editor. I was like, I really need to see this document. It's one document. The story is probably running right now. And he's like, do what you need to do. Call Jack if you need to. Now, in this case, the Railroad Board did the very next day give that document. They've been so much more transparent, which I said last week. But we're very fortunate to have Jack doing this kind of work and honestly to have editors that support this kind of work.
That's why we're here. That's why we're here. And I love talking about this with people. And, you know, when I get, you know, emails and phone calls, this is a fun topic to discuss because everybody has their sort of comfort level, you know, what's private, what's public. And that's a discussion we should have, you know, and I think it evolves and everything. But not to discuss it, not to, you know, our job is to push, you know, and if the answer is no, the answer is no, and we move on. But that's an important role, I think, for the press in America, for local journalism. We are the ones that are going to push for open access of information. And I personally always want to err on the side of transparency when it comes to our government. I think that's an important democratic value that we need to uphold. So end of rant.
Okay.
I'm stepping off my soapbox. I'd much rather talk about
food. Yes.
So let's do that.
Special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. I am very pleased to welcome the chef of Nolia, chef, owner, purveyor of the amazing Nolia, is how I really should qualify it, Jeffrey Harris.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming in, not the least of which it made me go out on a Tuesday night and have an incredible date night dinner with my husband. So,
thank you.
How long did it take you to get a reservation, Sherry?
Well, there were no reservations, but I called and somebody had canceled. So I was very, very...
I thought maybe you called and said, do you know who I am?
I did not do that.
Some people do that.
No, I don't do that.
No, we don't do that. I had the opportunity, Chef, to eat as well. You came around and said hello to everybody that night. I want to ask you about that in a second. But yeah, if I rank my favorite types of cuisine, New Orleans style is like probably top three for me. So I was really excited to go. And my wife got reservations around my birthday, but we had to settle for like a Wednesday night because you were booked out at least a few weeks.
Oh, it's insane.
You must
right
be
now.
For a relatively new restaurant to have that much excitement around it already. Are you surprised?
Very, but also humble at the same time. I'm the type of person that I like to let my work speak more than I do. And also, like I said, like from the first accolade or nomination of any from anything, it just went from there. And when the national stuff started getting in, it was like, all right. Holy
crap. So let's recap that. There was the Esquire list of.
Yes.
Go ahead, Sherry.
No, go ahead.
No, you have the notes. I want to make sure if anyone was under a rock and they don't know about Nolia, where this, you know.
I think we should start because this was a very big deal, not just for you, but also for Cincinnati, that you were a nominee for the James Beard Award in 2023.
Yeah.
But the national award, not in just our region.
Yeah.
And that really spoke to our food scene here and who you are. And that was incredible.
Yeah. And like one thing, like when I got the restaurant, like I knew I wanted to do like Southern food. And also I just wanted to put my culinary imprint on a city that I've been in for like 18 years. So I was like, all right, so this is what I'm going to do. I didn't know where it was going to go. And, the trajectory that we've been on since the doors opened has been insane. And everybody that's around me, everybody that's in my tight and immediate circle are like, I can't believe that this is happening. Like, you know, and some people are, or it's like this one lady told me one night, she's like, there's a lot of great restaurants in the city, but you're putting Cincinnati on the map. I was like, I didn't know how to take that because, like, I don't think I'm the only one, you know? And also, I just like that people have received us well, and others outside of the city has done the same as well.
So we also have, we should list all of the accolades, the Esquire 50 Best Restaurants in America.
Insane.
There's a lot of restaurants in America, so that's a very, yeah, the short list there.
Yeah.
And Open Table, of course, 100 restaurants, and that's like being voted by the people.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like the best of, for you, it's like the foodies are recognizing what you're doing, and then real people. Open Table, we know what we're doing.
I gratefully take that with a grain of salt and appreciation, because like it's just saying that like we're at least doing something right with the food, at least, you know, the service, and also from walking in. And also, like, I'm Southern, so like my grandmother would get mad, or she would slap me on the back of my head like if I didn't speak to people. So part of my hospitality is going around talking to everybody, saying hello, asking how you enjoying your meal, or if you're enjoying it, if you're not enjoying it, or whatever. That's just part of my hospitality, and that's just kind of how I was raised, like, you know. And I was telling my manager one day, I said, I can walk from this restaurant all the way to the stadium and walk past like 200 people and nobody will say anything, you know. I said, but my grandmother would make me say, why didn't you say hello, why didn't you, you know. So that's the addition of the Southern food that we serve, the Southern hospitality of speaking to everybody. So, and that right there alone, I think, goes a long way, because you don't normally see the person who's preparing your food or even get to speak to them, you know?
No, and he's not kidding. I mean, I was there last night and you came out. I didn't say, you know, we were coming in or anything. Yeah. I just was very lucky to get a reservation last second.
I thought that was really cool too. If you've not been to Nolia, you have your team right in the middle of the restaurant almost, where everybody can watch. And so that's a fun part of the experience, very consistent with what I've seen when I've gone to New Orleans to eat. And same, you know, once you got that seating kind of squared away and everybody was eating and drinking, you walked down and worked the room. I thought, well, that is really cool. And because I wanted to say hello to you, but I didn't even have to try. All of a sudden you were there checking in on us, you know.
Yeah.
And I asked you, I said, so what brought you to Cincinnati? And without missing a beat, you said Hurricane Katrina. So I'm interested. You said you've been here 18 years. Tell us a little bit about.
The time goes by really fast, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. Tell us about, you know, how Katrina affected you, how it brought you here, and give our listeners just a little bit of the backstory.
So hurricanes happen all the time, right? So, we kind of treated it just like any other time, like hurricanes come, they blow through and nothing really happens. See, I mean, it's very rare, like a severe one will come through and then like you have to leave and come back to whatever was happening, right? So I just remember like I think it was like the 28th or whatever. And it was like, my ex-wife at the time, I was like, well, we're going to watch the news. And so whatever, like Bob Breck was like our weatherman. Bob Breck was like the end all be all about weather. And so when Bob Breck said, we got up that morning and Bob Breck said, if you have not left by now, you should be leaving. Like, you know, you shouldn't even be hearing me speak because you're leaving, you know? And so we went to the West Bank side of Louisiana, New Orleans. And so we went over there. It's like going from like here to like Florence, Kentucky or something like that, right? And so we went to there and stayed with some friends. And so we knew that we knew like the storm was coming because the 28th was like beautiful. It was like sunny. It was hot. Like just like a normal day. And that's kind of how like hurricanes come about. Like the calm before the storm, if that makes sense. And so like I said, it was beautiful outside. It was hot. But later on, like by that nighttime, you know, you start seeing like wind pick up. You start seeing like it's being a little bit gray, you know. And so once, say about 10:30, 11 o'clock that night, you can really feel what's going on outside from being inside. So when the storm did actually hit, so it was more like, all right, looking out the window, you're seeing like the siding coming off of people's houses and stuff like that. Then like where we were kind of like above where I lived. So like, if anything, like it would probably be, wouldn't get any flooding from where I was at. So when it passed through, like the next day, it's back sunny, it's hot. They had water like curb high, like it wasn't that deep, you know? And I never forget one of the things that kind of let me know what we were dealing with was like, so we were in the garage of like the friend's house. And so his car was against like the door, the garage door. And we were just like trying to shoot pool, right? And so like, so the garage door was like already kind of pushing in, right? So, and then I know when we were shooting pool, like, you know, like you'll hit the ball, then like the ball will just keep going. Like so the, some wind is getting in from somewhere. And so like he said, I'm going to back the car up a little bit against the door, just kind of keep the door at bay, right? So
the door doesn't blow away, yeah, or blow in on you?
Yeah. So so he backed the car up a little bit, just kind of keep the door at bay, right? So the door is like still bending in. And so it was like, I was like, all right, yeah, so this ain't no normal storm. So but anyway, once it was over, it was like, all right, like we go try to get back to our side of the river the next day. So we got to the bridge and it was like the police were already up there, like, nah, you can't come on this side of the bridge. It's like, I live over here. So how am I going to get like to my house? I want to go see at least what's going on. You know, and then plus, like, I knew like, because like that Friday night when we got off work, I know like my chef, because I was a chef at Emeralds at that time. And so he called. He was like, look, he's like, nobody's coming to work next Monday until we know what's going on with the storm.
Wait, so Emeril called you?
No. Okay. Nah, Chef Chris. Okay. And so it was like, all right, so we got Saturday off. So like, that's not normal, you know? And so I was like, all right, cool. So I'm trying to put all these pieces together. I'm like, all right, so I don't know when I'm going back to work. So I need to, now it's time to get the ground back under my feet. Then plus like, you know, thank you for letting us stay over here for this time during the storm and all this other stuff. And then we realized like we couldn't go to where we lived at. And so we don't have no electricity at this time. We don't have nothing, right? So that was like, all right, so what's going on? The little cell phone that we did have, no reception. Every payphone was just busy signals. You just seen people like aimlessly driving around, like trying to find stuff. And then like you saw people like taking prices down off gas and then putting like higher prices on the gas price. Like
the gouging starts.
Yeah. You know, so it's like, all right, so I'm parking my car, so I'm not going anywhere. And so we just was just hanging tight until we was able to get out. Like, so like September 13th, we got up here.
What made you choose Cincinnati?
I didn't. You know, I didn't, and it was.
How'd that work? Well, let me ask you first. Was there anything left of your home?
It was still standing. The water got like, so if we were in here, the water was probably a little bit above the TV in my house, and my house is built like 2 feet off the ground. So,
that's at least as tall as us, you guys.
Yeah.
Like as tall as yourself, you know, so, or taller.
And so like if you have a shelf in your closet, like it was right underneath that shelf in your closet. So
so uninhabitable, like no chance.
Yeah, there's no way that would have been.
And all your possessions.
Everything that we didn't take with us. Like, you know, far as like, you know, like birth certificates, social security cards, all that type of stuff. All the important stuff, right? All the material stuff was done. Like, you know, so when we was able to get up here, it was just like, all right, this is the end of the ride. Like, you know, And that was it. And we had to start life here. And
explain that part of it. So you said you didn't have a choice. Were you part
of nobody? I mean, like when we got to the Greyhound station, it was no destination where you were going. Like I know
you just had to get out.
Yeah. So they was just getting people out. And mm-hmm. so it was just like one of those, all right, like we're just going to go with the flow because that's all we got right now.
So just for kind of for our listeners to remind them, at that point in New Orleans, the crisis was at its peak. You had people in the Superdome there for days waiting for just food, water, basic necessities. And if I recall right, all the disaster management officials were saying, look, we can only handle so many people here. If you have any means to go somewhere else for food, for shelter, for just the basic necessities, we're encouraging you to get out. Your choices are really, you know, we've got relief set up at the Superdome and a few other places, but we're overwhelmed. So if you can, you know, leave, go find relatives, just get out. So is that the position you were in at that time?
Well, kind of, sort of. So like, what a lot of people didn't see was, like, you know, they show like the convention center, they show like what was going on around the Superdome. Yeah, those are like people know about those places nationally, but nobody show like what was going on in the streets for real. Cause like you see the people looting like on Canal Street. Yeah, that's right. That's like right around the corner from the dome. So that's easy to see. But like we was on the West Bank. So I said I left September 13th. We got here September 13th. So you think that's almost 2 weeks after the storm. So you think about like no electricity, no nothing. Whatever's in the fridge, we're trying to salvage, cook, and then you can't store it or save it, you know? So like people are hungry at this time. People are thirsty at this time. People are looking at grocery stores in a whole different way now. Like, all right, like, yeah, I shop here. They're closed. I'm pretty sure something's in here that we can at least salvage. Canned goods, chips, whatever. You know, there's medicine in there for kids that are sick. So people were doing what they had to do to survive, you know. And, you know, you see the helicopters flying around, like, you know, pointing guns and all that type of stuff. Like we're looking at the helicopter like, dude, like, it's not that serious. We're not killing each other. We're just trying to eat. And like, you don't necessarily have to point your guns now here for anything. Like, you know, because like you see them hanging on the sides of the helicopter, like, and people are like scattering because you don't know what's going to happen from the helicopter. You know what I'm saying? So like all that type of stuff was going on. And then like, you know, like if you were driving, if you were trying to get around, like, you know, like where are you getting gas? Because you see people siphoning gas out of cars that have been left. Like people left those cars. So people getting whatever they could to keep the next day coming and so on and so forth. So like I said, like once we got here, that was it. It was just trying to get ground under our feet. You know, trying to put life back together. Like I wanted to immediately go back home. And then like once you really sit back and think about it, it's more like, all right, so if I go home, what am I going to? You know, like mm-hmm. I don't have a job. I don't have that. And then once we found out how severe the city was, it was like, oh, okay. You know, and then like, you know, they got all the other like stories and conspiracy theories about blowing up levees and all that type of stuff. I don't really care about that. I just want to get my life back, you know?
So you end up in Cincinnati just because that's where the bus was going?
Yeah.
And 18 years later.
Here we go.
Here we are.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal.
Do you feel like there was some sort of fate in bringing you here?
I mean, yeah, because like, no telling where my life would have been if I had went to Houston or Tennessee or Florida, Oklahoma, or wherever other people landed, you know? Because I think if I had went to Houston, I think I'd have been in the same mist as being in New Orleans almost. Like, you know, the aspirations probably wouldn't have been as high for me to want to be my own chef or anything. I probably would have been someone else's chef or whatever, just living life normally, you know? And like here, like it's just me. You know, so I get to sit with all my thoughts and ideas and put them together without having all those people around me with all their opinions about my thoughts and what I wanted to do, and me trying to cater to your opinions and thoughts. And then, like, all right, I am tripping on doing what I want to do. You know, let me just live a life like everybody else. I was like, nah, like, let me start taking these risks on my own and start seeing where it goes.
So I hate to interrupt a story at a moment like this because it's such a good story, but I would like to tell you something. I just got a text from our food writer, Keith Pandolfi, and we'd like to tell you that you got the nod for the best chef in the Great Lakes.
Oh, my gosh. Guys, Sherry's crying. Chef is – this is – This has to be one of the most, I don't even know how to describe it.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank y'all. I didn't expect that. Like, and I always tell my staff, my crew, that, like, anytime they nominate Noya for anything, it's us. Like, it's not just me. You know, because I can't do anything without them. And I want to say thank you to them for letting me be the chef that I can be to be able to be in these positions and also let them live in those positions with me, you know, so.
All right. So I'm going to call an audible here. We're recording our podcast. Chef Jeff Harris has just learned he has the James Beard nomination for Best Chef in America. And we're going to pause and let you...
In the Great Lakes region.
In the Great Lakes region. So we're going to pause, let you... I'm sure your phone's about to blow up. And then we will pick up once Sherry stops crying, okay? All right.
All right, you guys. We just took a little break. I composed myself because that was quite a story to hear. And then... just the idea that he's here now, and then to get that news this morning, it was a very emotional moment. I'll be writing a little bit about it, but we wanted to just collect ourselves. So here we are. The news is in the middle of all of the news breaking. Also from this region, I do want to say Elaine Benz from Moshinko was also nominated, and Jose Salazar, a past guest, is also on the list.
Awesome.
We're very fortunate here to have all three of you, but I'm very, this is something today.
Yeah.
I didn't think when we sat down to record this podcast that we would have to take a break because Chef Harris got the news. Sherry about lost herself. I'm like, did something happen? Tears of joy. We took a break.
So we did get the news from our food writer, Keith Pandolfi. He texted me. So that's how these things work.
Yeah.
So we took a break. We let the chef check in with his family and all of that stuff. And so we're going to pick right back up where we left off with now.
We are. And it did really resonate with something. You know, when we were kind of getting ready and doing all the audio checks and everything, we were talking. And you said to me that one of the reasons why you're a chef is that you want to give people a reason to come to Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Do you feel like this is part of that?
Yeah. I mean, because like with all the people nominated from Cincinnati, especially nationally, it put eyes on us. Like, you know, because like Cincinnati wasn't really a place where a destination spot to come eat, you know, let alone you didn't know. Like if you didn't, people knew Cincinnati from everything else but food. You know, so for the people that are nominated, Jose and Mochico, all those like that just resonates with everything that we're doing. Like we're not just doing food for the city. We're doing food for everyone. So when travelers come in, because sometimes I get customers that come in straight from the plane that say like, this is the spot people say we should eat. They have their luggage with them, like not even checked in a hotel, like, you know, so all that stuff means a lot. And so the more exposure we have culinarily, the better it is for this city.
So let me, can I ask you how this works? Because I don't actually know. Like, was there secret people? They come in and they, is it like undercover? They come in and taste the food? Like, look, how do you get on the radar of this?
I have no idea. But I did get some word on the street a couple, from the last one, right? So all I know is that I think some people get nominated to be judges or some sort of cohort for them. And so, like, they would, I guess, come scout your restaurant a couple times. And, you know, they're, I guess, whatever the criteria they have to kind of say, like, all right, this is deserving of the list. That's kind of how it goes. But far as who the people are, what they look like, whatever. But I can tell you since then how much attention we pay to single diners or people that come in, like, you know, so
it's
like,
true, you don't know.
So, like, but also, like, you know, that's when, you know, like, you try to tighten the reins a little bit, like, trying to make sure, like nothing falls through the cracks in every aspect, like, from front of the house, back of the house, so on and so forth, just to, like, make sure. Then also to have someone that kind of knows just as many people as you. It's like, all right, I don't know who this is. They're coming in by themselves. They're requested to sit at a certain spot in a restaurant, you know, so, you know, things like that. So then we just kind of coordinate the rest of the day around stuff like that. And sometimes it's multiple people that come in your restaurant at the same time as one person, Diana. They can come in as a group. You never know. But if you're not, I mean, everybody has an off day or things don't go as normal, but, like, you just want to be prepared for the moment, you know? So we try our best to be as consistent as possible. And no matter what goes on, we just try to give people the best experience they have when they come and know you. And I'm pretty sure everybody else kind of does the same things, but we're just trying to get a little bit more detailed, a bit more personal with the service and also with the food as well. Like, you know, like, we want the food to tell a story. We want you to look at them. Excuse me. Once you look at the menu and be like, all right, what is this? All right, what? That's what the interaction we would like with the servers, instead of being like the server being like, is this gluten free or whatever? Then they got to come ask me, you know, or whatever. But also for them to be like, what is Callaloo? Like, what is this? Like, why is this on the menu? Like, you know, so all those little intricate things, like, kind of all play its part. But you don't know.
So I want to finish the origin story, because I'm a sucker for origin stories. When I was a kid reading the comic books, those are my favorite editions. Like, how did the superhero become a superhero?
Spider-Man is mine.
Yeah.
And the Hulk as well.
So you end up in Cincinnati after Katrina. You've got experience as a chef and good experience. You've worked in Emeril Lagasse's restaurant. He came out of Commander's Palace. So you're kind of coming from this, you know, very well-known, established New Orleans culinary scene, but really not much else with you. So talk a little bit about how you got to this point where you've opened up your own restaurant. Like, where did you work? How did you get that going?
So, like I said, like, once I got here, once I knew, like, I couldn't leave or go right back. So I tried to stay in the same level of restaurant that I come from. So I went to, I knew, like, all right, so I'll say I'm in Kentucky. So I was like, all right. And people was like, yo, you can just go to Cincinnati and work. Like, I'm like, that's a whole nother state, dude. I'm in Kentucky. I didn't know it was, like, tri-state area and that close, right? So once I got over and the first place I went to, was the Cincinnati, the Hilton, Netherland Plaza. And so I went there and I filled out this application. And to be honest, I was getting kind of aggravated, like, with all the applications I was filling out, because, like, once people heard me speak, because, like, I'm pretty sure my accent isn't as heavy as it was when I got here. And so when I got kind of tired of telling the same story of Katrina everywhere I go. And, you know, like,
the
even
one
though
we asked you, sorry.
Well, no. I mean, like it's different now, but like it's like everywhere I go. Like, so if I'm in the store and, you know, I can be saying something to someone and it's like, oh, where are you from? And then there it goes again. Like, you know, so when I went there, I filled out the application and it was a little different. They want to know the story, but also they want to know, like, the well-being of me. Like, where, like, how's everything? Like, do you guys have everything you need? Like, do you guys covered, like, you know, forever? So, like, they gave us, like, blankets, sheets, pillows, like, all this stuff. Like, this is in the interview process, like, you know? And I almost felt kind of, like, guilty. I was like, why are you giving me all this stuff? Like, I never had to deal with that. You know, so I didn't know how to take that. And so I'm getting in this car that this church gave me. So I'm packing the car, I'm going back. And so like I think the guy's name, Mrs. Shear, was running the hotel at the time. And he called me personally, like right after I left. He was like, he said, how far did you get? And I was like, I said, I'm just about to get on the bridge. And so me saying get on the bridge, that's kind of foreign to people up here because anything that goes up in New Orleans is a bridge, no matter what. So he was like, if you can come back around, like we want to kind of finish the interview process. So I went back, paid for parking again, and went upstairs. And they gave me the job. And also they was doing like this Hurricane Katrina gala or whatever
that benefit night.
Yeah. So they invited me to come back to that as well upon hiring me. And
of
so
of course I do want to say, yes, this is the Hilton, but you were applying for a job. It was then,
yeah,
if not the top, one of the top restaurants in Cincinnati at all times, Orchids.
Yeah.
Right. So we're talking about top tier here.
So I was in between like Orchids and Palm Court. Like some days I would work breakfast for Palm Court. And then sometimes I work nights. And so when I got there, there was a chef, I think it's Chris was his name at the time. And then like a couple months later, then Todd Kelly came, you know? So I worked with Todd Kelly for about 2 years. And then I started wanting to spread my wings because like I looked at the tiers. So I was like, all right, so I can't go no higher than where I'm at. Like, you know, so, and, I left there, and that's when I became the chef at one of the sous chefs at the Cincinnati Zoo. And then it's kind of where I met my wife.
I was just going to say a very important stop on your story. You met your wife there.
Yeah. So, and so when I left there, I went to the Cincinnati. And I think Jose was there probably like, I think a year or so.
This is such a moment. Yeah. Right? Like, because he's texting you this morning, right?
Yeah. And so, like, so I worked there under him for a little bit. And then it was, I think he left, like, probably like, I think a year or two after I stayed there. And, you know, and I was like, all right, so what's next? And, you know, I mean, like, we stayed in touch, like, you know, like I'll see him here and there. And, you know, then when I start seeing the restaurant come together, and it was like, what's going on, B? Like, what are we doing? Like, and he was like, oh, just be still, like, you know, whatever. And I was like, all right, cool. And so, like, I was, like, during that time, I was at Nicola's for a little bit and working under Joel and stuff like that. And just waiting on the call, literally, like, you know. So I think I was there, like, probably, like, 5 or 6 months. And then one of the cooks from when we was at the Palace, he texted me, was like, bro, get the F over here right now. Like, I was like, what are you talking about? It's like, get over here. We're over here. And I was like, all right. So I went in and I saw Jose and I was like, yo, like, what's going on? He's like, he asked me about where I was at and stuff like that. I don't know the exact conversation, but it was along those lines. And then next thing you know, he was like, this is what we could do. This is it. Like, you accept? And I was like, yeah. And I said, all right, well, see you like Monday or something.
Was he talking about Salazar at this point? Yeah. His own
this
place?
This was Salazar. Inside Salazar. I was like, before it opened, okay. Like, you know? And so, like, so it was almost like the Palace went to Salazar. Like, you know, so everybody's familiar. Everybody knows how to work together. Everybody's, you know, so it was a good thing. So did that, then like then I moved back home in like 2015. And so like during that time, like, you know, like I just remember like looking at all these books from like Spain and all these tiles and all this other stuff. Like, so I knew something else was going on. Then he was like, yeah, like, what do you think about this? Like, look at these books and look at this book. Like, I was like, all right, we're looking at all these books at work and stuff. So I'm like, this don't go what we doing here. Like, this isn't like New American or whatever. Like, you know, so they had to move back home. And so like after a year of being home, I was a chef at Quarter Two Sisters in the French Quarter. Was probably the most insane place on the planet to work at. I've never seen 900 people come to brunch and we still survive. Like, you know? And then, like, and to be honest, like, my mom worked there when I was a kid. So my mom worked there. And so, like, the restaurant layout was familiar to me. And so a lot of people that were there still remember my mom and knew that I was her son, and stuff like that. And so for me to come in as a chef, you know, and that was kind of cool. So when I, so then this other opportunity came at the Ottoman Golf Clubhouse. They were opening up they had a golf course and they had like this little lunch spot, and they were turning it into like a fine dining dinner spot. And so it was me and the, he was a former sous chef of Commander's Palace. And so me and him like clicked like immediately. Like he's from Mississippi, I'm from New Orleans. And so we both put together really good menus and stuff like that. I mean, it took off kind of slow. Like, I mean, we're doing like 8-9 covers at night just because it was fairly new at the point. And once we got some traction, then the like numbers start picking up, because I think we could see like 50 people. Then we start seeing those numbers and stuff like that. And so then my wife, her grandmother was kind of ill. So then she was back and forth from here to New Orleans. And she was like, you know, she told me her grandmother passed. She was like, she wanted to buy the house that her grandmother lived, because her husband got the house built for her, and she didn't want that house. And plus, her dad grew up in that house. So, and then I'm like, okay, we can buy the house, but we don't have to move. Like, I'm literally just getting my feet wet.
You know, I almost said earlier when you pointed out he met his future wife working at the Cincinnati Zoo, that when you meet a local person here, it is like you instantly sprout roots, and it's hard to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so like,
and here it comes.
So we move back, right? And so when we moved back, like, my whole thing was like, I said, like, I really didn't want to work for anyone at this point. I wanted to kind of do my own thing. And so we went to dinner at Mita's. And so when we got to dinner, like, I didn't say anything that I was coming to dinner or anything. And I said, all right, so I'm about to go in the kitchen and say, like, thank you, you know, for an awesome meal. Because we went to dinner for closing on the house and stuff like that. A friend of mine, Nick Foltz, hooked us up with closing on the house. And so I went to the kitchen. I was like, yo, I said, well, thank y'all for a good meal. And Jose was expediting. He turned around. I was like, screamed and yelled and gave me a hug. He whispered some stuff in my ear and stuff like that. And I was like, yo, I just came to eat. Like, you know, I didn't want to do anything. And so then we ended up talking, and then I ended up working at Mita's for a little bit, you know? And
he seems like he's pretty convincing.
Okay. And then, like, I was like, all right. So I did that for a little bit. And then, like, a chef position came, because I said, if I'm going to be a chef, I need to run somebody's restaurant. Like, so I went, did that. Was a chef at Blinkers for a little bit. That was it was good and bad, I can say. They were kind of like stuck in their ways. They didn't want to change. Like, you know, they didn't see the future of what they could be. And so right after I got married, I think that's when I left there. Me and my wife got married in April 16, and that's when I left. No, that was April 18, I'm sorry. And so I left. And then
You can't get your anniversary wrong.
No.
Even though it's a chaotic and exciting morning, still some things do have to be right.
Yeah, so when I left, that's when everything started like going for me. And a friend Josh, who owns Mazunte, told me, he said, you'll be a selfish asshole to not give people your food. And I was like, okay, I get it.
There's your headline, Sherry. I love it.
and that's when I started like trying to find out who I am as a chef and what I want to be as a chef. My friend Chris Burns allowed me to help him operate his restaurant while he was going through some very tremendous time for his life, because he was able to adopt this kid that he was trying to do. And I had a great time at Commonwealth. And I was also going to Finley Kitchen at that moment and trying to get, like, doing catering, doing pop-ups and stuff like that. And all the people that helped me at Finley Kitchen, like, kind of guided me into what I became today. And so they picked me to be in the Finley Launch Program, and I was going to get the restaurant in Finley. And then the pandemic happened, and then I was like, it was almost like a blessing in disguise, because I think if we had opened when we did, we'd have been dead. Like, you know? So then Elias from Elias Barbecue called me and was like, yo, I heard about Finley Launch. This is what we got going on. Like, you know, he's telling me about the Oakley Food Hall and things like that. So he called me down, and then I went down, saw the spot, told me, like, showed me, like, blueprints. And, like, he's like, your food would be perfect here if you want to do New Orleans food. And so, like, at Jimmy Lou's, we did traditional New Orleans food, like your po' boys, your gumbos, and fried chicken, and jambalayas, and all that. And he said, like, yeah, this is going to be the bar. I was like, well, put us right by the bar. So we had a stall right by the bar, and like probably almost like 7 months, 7 months in. And so we're in the old Please space. So like I always liked the location of that restaurant. And so I said, like, I like the size of the restaurant. And I was like, I said, if this ever was to come up, like, I'm going to definitely snatch it. Like, you know, so, and it was just luck of the draw, honestly. So, like, I'm driving past that one day, and I saw, like, because one of the bartenders used to bartend at Please. And so I saw him in there, and I pulled up, and I stopped, and I talked to him for a little bit. And I think they was just wrapping things up. Like, you know, I think he was getting ready to turn the keys in. And so literally, so the landlords came in and was like telling me about the space, how many people they have lined up to look at the space. And I was like, forget that. Like, what do I need to do to get the keys to this place? He's like, yeah, the people want it. I said, I don't do nothing. I said, I just want to make it mine. Like, literally. So went through the LOI situation, and then people looked over, lawyers and stuff looked over the paperwork, and then signed the LOI. It's like, all right, what's next? Like, what I got to do to get the keys? He told me about the deposit that was needed for that. I said, I'll see you in the morning.
So you just walked in, negotiated a letter of intent, convinced them not to show the property, that you were the guy.
Yeah, that's it. Like, you know, and that's it. And to this day, like, there's like nobody was ever as bold as you. Like, you know, and I don't know who's all looking, so I can't say specific names or anything like that.
Right.
But I'm sorry if I skipped the line. Like, you know?
Well, I don't think we're sorry.
I had a mission.
Like, or you know? Cincinnati.
You know? And then, like, you know, that was the one thing that kind of got on my nerves, too. Like, because, like, every time somebody would, like, do a story, they couldn't do a story without saying please. It's like you were kind of, like, dimming the light of what I was trying to do. That's how I kind of took it. And I was like, yeah, people love
that down
please.
In my head. All right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. You know, and it was like, oh, big shoes to fill. Or, you know, like, this chef takes over former Please space. Like, it's done. It's dead. All right. So let it die, just like with everything else. And I was like, all right, I'm not doing no more interviews with nobody. Like, I'm going to just work and try to dead this whole Please thing. We have a writing on our wall, because, like, we have a wall where chefs sign the wall and stuff. So we have a writing that says, like, please, no thank you. like, you know, and that's kind of like the reminder, like for that's us, great. Like, you know, like, all right, we're Nolia now. Like, yeah. You know, I know there are still please lovers. I mean, we get it all the time, you know, and but now it's like it's Nolia and we're here talking about Nolia right now.
So you're celebrating your 2-year anniversary
in April. In April. Yes.
That's yeah. your April 16th, right?
19th.
Okay. Yeah. So 2 years. And next week, you're starting a new menu.
Yeah.
New Do you feel more pressure now on that menu?
No, if anything, it just makes me relook at everything and make sure whatever we're doing is going to be that much more better than what we originally planned. And also just try to make sure that the food we put out is the best thing we're putting out. Like, seriously. And we know for sure that whatever you experience in Nolia, you only get at Nolia. You know, like, we try not to, we don't, we look at what's going on, but we don't do what's going on. We kind of do our own thing. And, like, we're not a trendy restaurant. We're not like, oh, let's do, like, oxtails 5 different ways. Like, no, we do something different. Like, if we get oxtail, like, we did oxtail probably about a month ago, and most people were expecting, like, you know, the little cut-up tail, whatever. We gave you the whole thing, you know?
I think that's probably a surprise to some people.
Yeah, you know, we gave you the whole thing, and it's, like, you know, like, you put it on the tables for everybody. Like, everybody can eat off this thing, you know? And it we sold out in, like, an hour. So, but, you know, we try to not do what others do and do what we do. And do it well. That's the motto in the kitchen. You know, if we're not trying to do our best, then what are we doing? You know?
Well, on that note, we want to congratulate you again.
Thank you.
Big day. I think this is probably the most fun I've had on the podcast for a while.
Agree.
It's not
that we don't love all our guests, because of course
right.
we do.
Yeah. We're going to thank Lisa Gillespie, who helps us book our guests, for picking this moment to have you
right,
in the
right?
studio with us. You know, congratulations. I'm sure a lot of people have already been to Nolia based on the fact it's, you know, difficult to get a reservation. But Sherry and I both give it, you know, our recommendation
yeah.
for what that's worth. And also, I think something you touched on is the dynamic approach you take to the menu.
Yeah. We try to cover every single diner that walks through the door, whether you're vegan, pescatarian, vegetarian, no matter your allergies or anything, we got you covered. We want everybody to enjoy a meal. We don't want somebody to come in like, oh, well, I have this kind of person at the table, and now we got to conjure up something to kind of appease them. Like, no, we have something on the menu you can eat. So you're not just going to get a salad because of your dietary restriction, or a plate of vegetables just because of your choice of eating. If your person next to you is enjoying a meal, then you'll be enjoying a meal along with them. And so every time we think about a menu, we put all those factors in front of us. Sorry for giving out the secrets to the rest of y'all for that. But yeah.
And
but
we didn't even touch on the cocktails. I mean, I had like a very, I think it was a Sazerac inspired cocktail that was just like perfect. Just set the, you know, the tone for the night. So, well, again, thanks for spending this time with us, Chef.
Thank you, guys.
And again, congratulations.
Yeah. I can thank you guys for having me, and see why my watch is still shaking so much later on. But it's going to be one of those days. Get to work. I can't wait to see my sous chef and see what she's talking about, because I'm pretty sure she's excited and ecstatic as well. So, and we're going to have a very good day today and be talking to a lot of people a lot longer at the tables today, probably. But thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Sherry, do you need a moment? Are you okay?
You know, because I could see the, you know, emotion in him, because I'm sitting here. And that was, it was really moving to see. And also, I did my job before this, was working in Fort Myers, Florida. So it was bringing up a lot of emotions for me. I was very lucky to never have covered a hurricane in my time there. It was like a low period in Fort Myers, but I did cover many, many tropical storms, and those can be very intense. And I can't even imagine like living through a hurricane if it's the tropical storms were what they were that
I
saw.
And just he provided, a glimpse into almost the dehumanizing experience. You're trying to eat. People just, they know there's food in the grocery store, so they're trying to get access to it. And there's armed National Guardsmen flying around in helicopters trying to keep people from looting and all of that stuff. Just, you know, I remember, you know, watching that coverage back then. And every time I talk to somebody who was there, I get like a little bit more of an appreciation for what that experience was like. And I think he provided that to us today. But then, you know, all of a sudden we have this big moment of celebration as he realizes he's a James Beard finalist again. And what a moment to share with him. I felt a little guilty, like we're hogging him in our studio and all these people are trying to call him. So we did pause, as you know, let him call his family. He even talked to his mom. It was just such a
yeah, that was so sweet.
It's just a wonderful moment.
Jose texted him. Now we didn't ask.
And we know that Jose. We also know that Jose Salazar sends texts that are full with profanity.
Only because he said that we didn't actually see the text, but they were texting with each other. And that's such a good origin story that he worked in those kitchens with him and everything. Oh, and now they're nominated together.
Watching this, you know, the current wave of chefs. In our community, kind of watching them kind of come into their own. And the backstories are phenomenal. It's a close-knit community. Just fantastic to get a little bit of a glimpse on that. And I don't think we can top a Cincinnati moment, you know,
except that for you and I what have it experienced. Is like, I can't say enough, like having gone to Colette and now last night we had a date night there. It just was spectacular. I felt like I said, Paris, New Orleans, it does seem like that. It's very chic and small and just had a very intimate vibe to it. And like people were coming in out of the rain last night, shaking off their umbrellas, and it was all like cozy and warm in there. It was just such an amazing experience. We'll let the award speak for itself for the quality of the food, but just the dining experience.
Well, we're fortunate here. I feel like, you know, we maybe should rebrand this podcast Politics and Food and just like make it that. All right. Well, let's call that a podcast, Sherry.
Yes.
All right.